Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, October 3rd, 2011. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. Today's show will inform, inspire, and encourage you. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Tales from the Treehouse, Inside a Memoir, with my guest, Jean Thomas, educator and author. But first, I'd like to welcome all of you, my listeners. Whether you're listening live on the phone or you're over there in the chat room, I'm honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. Some of you are listening to this show after the fact from the archives. In any case, welcome and thank you. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell others about it who can benefit. And thanks to modern technology, it's very easy to do that. Over on my show page at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, you can see right under my photo a number of ways to keep up with the show. One of the easiest ones is the follow button. If you click that button, you will get an announcement and reminder in your email each week of each upcoming episode. Now, have you always wanted to write a book, but you hesitated because you didn't know how to get started? Or maybe you're one of those people who's been writing a book for months, maybe even years, but you don't know how to get it published. Now, I know some of you fit in this category because you've told me. If this sounds like you, I invite you to get your copy of the Home Study Workshop, which I've created called How to Write Your Nonfiction Book in 90 Days, Even If You're an Ordinary Person and Hated High School English. I will show you in this workshop how to go from choosing your title to getting your book written quickly and marketed effectively. Most important, in this workshop, I'm even going to tell you how you can start earning money from your book before it's even finished. Now, how cool is that? So go download your copy of the Home Study Workshop. It's at my website, www.abookin90days.com. As soon as you place your order, you'll be able to download the course and get started right away. On this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Each week, I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change and adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, you name it. We talk about a wide variety of topics here because all of them contribute to your lasting happiness. Today's episode is Tales from the Treehouse, Inside a Memoir with my guest, Jean Thomas. Jean has actually had three major careers. His first career was air traffic control, where he has the dubious distinction of being among 12,000 controllers that were fired by President Reagan during the infamous PATCO strike in 1981. After retraining from that career, Jean got into defense contracting, where he managed a division of accounting for General Dynamics. At the time, that was the largest defense contractor in the world. When the Cold War ended and defense contracting began to wane, Jean migrated to education, my field. After earning three advanced degrees, Jean rose to become a school district superintendent before moving into the college university education ranks. Jean's writing style has always enabled him to share his thoughts in ways that many characterize as an easy read, and I can attest to that because I'm reading his book right now. I'm impressed that Jean has completed 26-mile marathons. I'm really impressed with that. He and his partner, Marilyn, are avid walkers and fitness buffs, and they live in Alpine, California. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today, Jean Thomas. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Flora. How are you?
I am great this morning. I haven't done a marathon, but I'm doing great this morning. I'm so happy you were able to come and join us here, and I want to jump right into the interview because I want to give you time to read a little bit from your book.
Well,
so why don't you tell us what made you decide to write and why did you choose to write about your family history first?
Well, I guess the experience of writing my first dissertation really proved to me that I had the ability to write in the first place. And all of the writers that I talked to, they all said, write about what you know. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, writing about what I knew was about my family. And as soon as I got started into writing that, it became really clear to me that I could take this skill and write in other directions, which is what I've done.
Hmm, that's wonderful. And that's interesting because as a publishing coach, I was surprised that the majority of the clients who come to me are writing memoirs or writing stories about their family history as well or episodes. So what does your family think about your books? Because this is one of the things my clients are concerned about, what their families will think when they write their family histories or their memoirs. What about your family?
Well, everybody's been really supportive. I have cousins from all over the country who mm-hmm. read my first book, Tales from the Treehouse, and mm-hmm. they've all given me a collective thumbs up, and I really appreciated that.
Wow.
My siblings, who are all younger than I, they've responded in a very positive way as well. Mm-hmm. They were a little surprised by some of the stories that I wrote, especially when I started writing in my second book, Treehouse to Palm Trees, about things that happened when they were born, but they were still too young to remember. So all in all, they were very, very supportive.
That's great, because one of the things that my clients are worried about is whether their family, you know, will object to things they said, or are they going to be, you know, upset, mad, or whatever. So in your case, you've had a very positive experience, so I'm sure that's been very heartwarming for you.
Yes, it has, and I really do appreciate the support they've given me, and not just in you know, reading the books and giving me some feedback on the stories themselves, mm-hmm. but the fact that my brother, for example, said to me, you know, I had to sit down and kind of go back over this story because it was like I was living it, but I was too young to really remember it. So it was really good to hear that kind of feedback from them.
That is true. Now, who in your family inspired you most to write?
Well, that's kind of a two-part question. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad read all the time, but until she wrote her dissertation, my mom really wasn't much of a writer. But mm-hmm. she claimed that she had at least two novels in her. Unfortunately, she never got to write even one. But she mm-hmm. always encouraged me and my siblings to express ourselves through the written word. Mm-hmm. The second part of that is my brother Val. All of the stories in Tales from the Treehouse are taken from things that we did together as kids. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the process of watching these stories come out of my mind and flow into my computer screen and eventually into a book. And as I was writing these things, I'm looking out a window here where I do my writing, mm-hmm. and there's a road that feeds towards the house. And I have to tell you, sometimes as I was writing, I half expected to see myself and my brother as little kids running down the road to the house, you know.
Wow.
So I guess really my brother and my mom were the people that really inspired me to get into writing.
Yeah, I recognized when I was reading your book that your brother Val is a very important part of your life and, of course, a huge inspiration for your book. So I know I'm going to ask you to read a little bit from your book for us.
Sure.
So whatever part you choose to read, we'll be happy to hear it. So
okay.
I give you the floor.
Okay, I'm going to read from the last paragraph on page 16 to the end of the story, and this particular segment is about Grandpa and the pipe.
Okay.
Grandpa always used to keep his cigars and pipe on a table next to his chair. The table had an old ashtray that he laid his pipe in and where he stubbed out most of those foul-smelling cigars. Sometimes he would ask us to light his pipe or cigar for him, a chore we only half-heartedly wanted to do considering the results. But on this day, our plan was to call for him to light his own pipe.
Mm-hmm.
When we were sure he was sound asleep, we crept over to his table, we picked up his pipe, and dashed around the corner to a small hallway that led to the dining room. He had also taken one of his cigars and his old pocket knife, the one that he used to cut his cigars with. Since we'd watched Grandpa cut that piece of cigar to fit his pipe so many times, we knew exactly how much to put into it without arousing his suspicions. Then we put the cigar into the pipe, and we put these loads, they're kind of like a piece of tobacco, into it. So, do you think this is enough, Gunky said. Then answering his own question, he said, we better add some more, just in case they don't fire. You see, we actually didn't know what to expect. We'd actually never used these loads before. We had just heard what they might do for other kids in the neighborhood. By the time we finished stuffing the loads into the tobacco, the small canister, the loads was empty. Now that we had our little booby trap ready, we came around the corner to check and see if Grandpa was still asleep. Even though he wasn't making his usual snoring sounds, we could see his eyes were closed. As quietly as we could, we put his materials back on the table and moved over to a small couch across from him and waited to spring the trap. Within a few minutes, as if on cue, Grandpa stirred and came to life. He looked over at us, staring back at him like two cats who'd swallowed mice, and asked, what have you boys been up to? Nothing, Grandpa, we answered in unison. He looked at us suspiciously for a moment, then shrugged his shoulders and looked around the room. When he decided that nothing was wrong, he looked around, found a pitcher of ice water opposite his cigar and pipe table, poured a glass and drank it down. We were nervous that Grandpa wouldn't find the loads in his pipe, so we decided to force the issue. Why don't you smoke your pipe, Grandpa? We put the tobacco in it for you while you were asleep. Grandpa picked up the pipe and eyed it suspiciously. We thought for sure he would discover the loads and get after us. For a long moment, Grandpa turned the pipe over and over in his hand. Then he said, I think I'll smoke a cigar instead. But we fixed the pipe for you, Grandpa. Why don't you use that first? Our nearly whining voices must have betrayed us by now, but Grandpa didn't seem to catch on. Ever so slowly, he put the pipe down and put the cigar down and picked up his pipe again. This time, Grandpa reached over, pulled a match from a round beanbag match holder behind his tray. He struck the match on the side of his chair as he always did and lit his pipe. For a long moment, nothing happened. Grandpa took a couple of deep draws and sat back in his chair to enjoy his pipe. Suddenly, a small pop came from his pipe. Grandpa took the pipe out of his mouth, looked at it, and then put it back in. Then three tremendous explosions erupted from his pipe, one right after another. The contents of the pipe spewed up in the air like a tiny volcano. Grandpa sat flabbergasted, unable to speak. For a second, he didn't know what hit him. Across the room, Gunky and I were around the floor rolling, laughing so hard that tears were rolling down our faces. Our plan had come off without a hitch. By now, Grandpa had regained his senses and was spouting his usual, I'm going to take my belt off to you, medley. We'd also recovered, and once we realized that we actually could get a whipping for what we did, we scampered out of the living room and ran up the stairs to our apartment and hid until our mom came home. We were still expecting the worst once she heard what we'd done to her father, but when Mom first did get into our apartment, she said nothing and set about cooking dinner. Gunky and I were happily surprised, but said nothing about Grandpa. Many years later, after Grandpa had passed away, our mom told us the rest of the story. It seems that when she got home, she found her father in his chair, in tears from laughter. When she asked him what was so funny, all he could say was, you got some boys there, Vivian, some boys. Grandpa babysat us for many occasions after that. We never spoke about the pipe, and he never asked. But every time he went to smoke his pipe or a cigar, Grandpa always checked it over carefully, then looked over at us and smiled.
That's beautiful. I enjoyed that story so much. I was reading along with you. Could you tell? Oh, that's great. I'm so happy that your family has received that well, because it's a beautiful book and stories that you tell that all of us can relate to, even if we didn't have the exact situations. But we certainly had occasions like yours where we came up with some schemes to surprise and fool our elders, our parents, our grandparents. And I'm telling you, you guys got off lucky, because I can remember a couple of incidents in my upbringing where we didn't get off so lucky afterwards. So.
Well, I have to tell you that that was one of the times where we didn't pay the price for our little escapade.
Uh-huh.
There were times where we did pay the price.
I'm sure, because it sounds like you guys were pretty creative and bold. Well, now that the listeners have heard a bit about Tales from the Treehouse, Her to Taste. Tell listeners how we can contact you and purchase your book, this book, and of course you're going to be coming up with others as well. But tell us how we can get your books.
Okay, well, you can go to my website. It's genethomas.posteros.com. That's genethomas.posteros.com.
Okay.
And there you can find a list of my books and the internet places that you can buy them, including right there on my webpage.
Okay.
You can also find my social network page addresses and my email address as well.
Okay.
There's also, and we hadn't talked about this yet, but there's also a page that's devoted to those who would like me to write some of their family stories for them.
Oh.
And if people would like to have those stories collected and put into a book or some other medium, you can contact me using the webpage.
That's amazing. So that you will listen to, I suppose you talk to them, you interview them, you get their stories, and then you're willing to write their family stories for them as well, correct?
Absolutely.
You know, sort of like ghostwriting, except that they are supplying all the content because you're just shaping it into good storytelling form, correct?
That's it. And you know, if we're talking about ghostwriting,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put it so much in the context of ghostwriting as it is relating the stories. All I am really is, at some point, a stenographer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow, but making a better story out of it because you have a knack for telling it in an engaging fashion. That's what makes it amazing.
Well, I appreciate the compliment.
So let me repeat your website for those who are eager to rush over there right after the show. The website is genethomas, G-E-N-E-T-H-O-M-A-S, dot posterous, spelled P like in Paul, O-S-T-E-R-O-U-S, dot com. And once you get over there, you have all the information you need to learn about the author, to get the book, and even to find out how Gene will help capture your family stories. That's really cool. I wanted to ask you, now that you've covered your own family history, where are you going next with your writing other than helping people with their stories? What else are you doing with your writing?
Well, even though I enjoy the process of transcribing other people's stories, mm-hmm. I much prefer writing stories that are generated by ideas that I come up with.
Sure.
And fictional writing is, the way I see fictional writing is, it's something that can carry you to places that TV or video can't take you. And because the written stories are creatures of your mind, they mm-hmm. reside there and no place else. So when I'm looking at writing, I feel like a good writer has the power to transfer those creatures, if you will, from their mind to the reader's minds.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, holds the real untapped source of pleasure that few other venues can come up with. And each time I write a story, I'm challenged to create another world for readers to really enter and to enjoy. As for the process of writing, I found that, you know, when I begin a storyline, the story at some point begins to write itself.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's kind of hard to explain, especially when so many people hear that writers experience, the writer's block. And
mm-hmm.
I understand that, but I found that once I begin a story, the threads of the story begin to weave a tapestry that is unique and independent of where I originally planned the story to go. So oftentimes I'm kind of surprised by where I wind up when I finish the story.
Well, you know, that's interesting because I've heard that several times before by fiction writers, that once they get into the story, the characters take on a life and a direction of their own. And I find that so fascinating because I'm a nonfiction writer and haven't explored fiction. I do think fiction is an important part of nonfiction, though. I do think that nonfiction writers can benefit from learning some fiction techniques because just as in your storytelling, it pulls the reader in. And even if you're about to do some kind of nonfiction explanation or tell them how to solve problems or build a better business, it helps to tell a story first because we all relate. That's the oldest form of communication is storytelling. So I think it's fabulous that you're going to move into fiction. And I can see that you're not going to have a very long move from your writing to over to fiction. It's going to work. What is the next project that you have on your hands for fiction?
Well, actually, I just completed a fictional novel about a street writer who lived between my parents' generation and mine.
Mm-hmm.
He goes through many experiences that his chosen profession immerses him in, but more importantly, he has to deal with a gift that he has that literally is a life and death commodity.
Mm-hmm.
How that gift impacts his and others' lives is what the story is all about. I call the story Rock Hands. It should be through with the copy editing and publishing gauntlet by late this year, early next year.
I have to laugh when you say publishing gauntlet, because it is a gauntlet.
It is. Absolutely it is.
To go
yes.
through. So this is a street fighter. Is the street fighter's name Rock Hands, or that's the...
That's the name of the story.
The
street fighter's name is Gerald.
Oh, okay, okay. So we can look for that, and of course, once it's out, we will be able to find out about it over on your website.
Absolutely.
The other book, correct?
That's correct.
Oh, cool. Now, what place do you think books will occupy in the future? Because some people are starting to worry with the onset of digital books and devices such as Kindle and Nook and so forth. People are kind of worried about what's happening with books. What do you think?
Well, in my mind, books, at least fictional books, in whatever form they evolve, will always be a part of the human experience. It seems to me the form of a book, that the form that a book takes becomes less an ingredient in capturing the human experience than it was even 10 years ago. I mean, now there's a generation of young people who come up that would rather read a Kindle than turn the pages of a book, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're still turning pages in the Kindle.
Sure.
But they are much more immersed in the technology. But the way I look at it is when you're through with whatever medium you're using for the book, it still has to be a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't simply assume that because it's going to be transferred from one medium to another that the story's going to hold up. The story's got to be good first and foremost before anything else happens.
Yeah, you're right. And one of the things I tell people in my workshop who are worried about the changing nature of publishing is that a book is just a container. And I heard Seth Godin allude to this. A book is just a container for ideas. And with Kindle and the other forms that books are taking, the container has changed, but the ideas still are there and need to be there. As you said, they also need to be engaging, and it doesn't matter what the container is because people will access whatever one of those they prefer. I mean, some people have preferred audiobooks for a long time to paper books. So the more we add to the mix of how books are accessed, I think the better. Better to get readers and get people engaged with our work, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think at this point in our existence as human beings that we could interchange books with the word thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And when people say, I want to go read a book, it's really, I'm going to go access some thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And the thoughts that were put down by a person or persons, be it fictional or even if they're nonfiction, are still thoughts of the human condition, thoughts
mm-hmm.
of things that people want to share with other people. And the medium, like I said earlier, really isn't as important anymore as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And I think people are wasting time stressing about that.
Yeah.
But some people like to stress. I've heard... tend to be older people who say, oh, a book is not a book unless it's paper and I want to be able to hold it and so forth and so on. Well, that's good and great for you, but also accept that other people have other preferences. And it's still, back to what you said, thoughts, good writing is just going to always be there, just always going to be there. Well, this has been great. Do you have any advice for writers who are writing their own memoirs right now or writing books in general? You've given us a few. Do you have any closing words of advice?
Well, for people who are writing their memoirs, don't believe the hype that your life was not interesting. It was interesting for you, and more than likely, it was interesting for the people who were in your life. So write and enjoy going back and reflecting over what happened at the beginning, the middle, and the latter stages of your life, and take the time to put that down.
Mhm. Okay. Did you keep notes all along the way, like as a kid growing up, or did you just pull these things from memory as an adult as you began to write?
I would say option B. I didn't really take a lot of notes as a kid. I was busy getting in and out of trouble. So
yeah, like.
So it was mostly just remembering things that happened. Plus, as you alluded to earlier, a lot of what happens in families is that those stories are repeated over and over and over again at Thanksgiving or any kind of family get-together. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take the extreme, yeah, I guess our family took notes and we share them with each other over the turkey.
Well, you know, you have an amazing memory then, because the not only the incidents, but the detail with which you can recall the setting up of the pipe to set Grandpa up was great detail and great imagery. And so, yeah, remembering the incident is one thing, but being able to tell it in a good story fashion is a wonderful skill. And I'm so happy you shared this with us. And I'm really surprised and delighted to learn that you will also help the rest of us who perhaps aren't as skilled at telling our stories, but of course have stories to tell. And I'm happy you said that don't believe the hype that your life wasn't interesting, because all of our lives are interesting.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. We're at the end of today's show, and I want to urge all of my listeners who have been enlightened, encouraged, informed, or empowered by today's episode to share what you've learned with your family, your colleagues. Let them know about Gene's book and also about his service in helping you craft your own family history. Remember, the recording of this episode will be here on my site, on my show page, blogtalkradio.com/FloraBrown, where you can come and listen to it anytime you want, 24/7. Gene, thanks again for being my guest. And to my listeners, thanks for tuning in. Please be sure to go over and get my workshop, my home study workshop, How to Write a Nonfiction Book in 90 Days, from my website, abookin90days.com. I invite all of you to come back and join me again next Monday, October 10th at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for another informative and exciting show. I'm coming to you today from Anaheim, California. I want you to have a blessed week, and be sure to tune in again next week. And remember, color your life happy.